is Joyce Community Church, where you can wake up to the love of God, grow in Christ, and step out in service. You are listening to our weekly sermon featuring Pastor John Kyler.
Every once in a while, I make a trip to the local transfer station, as I did this week. And I had an old, among other things, I had an old microwave that was no longer of any use to anybody. So I unload it. There's actually a big part of those of you from Mansfield, probably true most places, they have a recycling place where you drop these kinds of appliances. And I walk up to this big box and I lean over to put this in, and there's probably 25, 30 other microwaves in there. And I'm like, ugh, I'm going to add to this. I'm sorry. So I put my microwave in there. And I was struck by how much stuff ends up there. And we don't often get a chance to really meditate on that and how senseless it is to put our identity into stuff. So if you think about it, then the words of Jesus make a tremendous amount of sense. Don't trust in stuff, but trust in me and who you are in me. As followers of Christ, we face challenges every day. And in Luke's Gospel, chapters 12 and 13, Jesus is addressing the two most formidable challenges, I think, that we face, that of hypocrisy and greed. They're big obstacles or challenges for us for a number of reasons, I think primarily because we don't perceive them in ourselves. They're the kind of things we see in others pretty easily, but no, my guess is I've probably never came home and said, gee, I'm feeling really greedy today. How about you, hon? You just don't think that way. Nobody thinks they're greedy. You know, how and everybody thinks that they're, you know, I'm not a hypocrite. I'm being honest, at least, right? But anyways, those two things, I think Jesus, they are related in some ways. I think they're both a crisis of identity that grows out of insecurity and fear of emptiness. And they're both essential components of a false self, an identity that's untrue to who God has called us to be. So I'll use the terms wealth, money, kind of interchangeably. I just remind you that Jesus talked about wealth and money, and along with that, poverty, more than any other topic, except for the kingdom of God, and that includes more than heaven, more than judgment, more than love, more than prayer. And that between, particularly Luke's writings in Luke in the book of Acts, it averages out that he speaks about money, possessions, wealth about every seven verses. You know, here at Storrs Community Church, we do a series almost every year on what we call stewardship and reflecting on what God has given us so that we can then look to the future and how we'll support this ministry. We do this year, I'm focusing on a three-week series. If I were to speak about money as often as Jesus does, we would have a 35-week series. But I'm not going to do that, at least not directly. We'll get to the words that Jesus says, but In those Jesus talks about and warns that there is a deceitfulness of wealth, that it's kind of deceptive and it tricks us. We don't see its work, its dark side at work in our lives. And so we have to watch out, he says. Following Christ calls for a fundamental shift in the source of our identity and the way and our security away from possessions towards trust and reliance on God. So Jesus was speaking, and a crowd of thousands were pressed around him, squishing up against each other to get close to him. He had been teaching about this idea of hypocrisy and being honest and the reality of God's judgment, who was going to hold us accountable, and also God's provision and care. When a man begins to wiggle and push and shove his way through the crowd, and when he pops out, he almost loses his balance and standing before Jesus, and he says, "Teacher, tell my brother to share the inheritance with me." And Jesus says, "Dude, haven't you been listening? Don't you know who I am? I didn't come here so that you could use me to manipulate your relationships." It's interesting, and there might be a sermon in there somewhere about how not to pray. How not to pray is don't tell Jesus what to do, right? Particularly when it comes to fixing people around you. Remember Martha and Mary. Martha said, "Jesus, tell Mary to do this." But I digress. It's a little early in my message to be doing that, so I'll try to stay focused here. So Jesus says to the man, "Look, who appointed me to be the judge between the two of you?" In other words, you don't really know what I'm about. And rather than taking sides, Jesus warns them. He warns the man, but also those who are listening. He says, "Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed," sometimes translated covetousness or insatiable desire, "for life does not consist in the abundance or the overflow of possessions." And he tells the parable of the rich landowner who has such a great year and his harvest is plentiful beyond bear, and his crops just keep producing and rolling in. I imagine he was traveling his fields and he's noticing the grain and how full and thick and lush it was. It's like, where am I going to put all of this? Jesus never alludes or says that the man did anything wrong, that he came by his wealth through hard work and honesty, and that the abundance was a logical result of his hard labor. But then he says that the man thought to himself, "What shall I do? I've got no place to put my crops, and so I'm going to tear down my barns, build new ones, put all my crops in there, and then I'll be like, I am good. Everything's good and safe. Put his feet up, eat, drink, and be married, and be merry, happy." He could be married too, but and Jesus isn't condemning or challenging the idea of planning and forethought or any of that. But notice the perspective of the rich man in the parable. He says, "What shall I do? I have nowhere for my crops. I will tear down my barns, and I will store my surplus grain. And I will say to myself, 'Self, you have plenty.
this is what I will do. I will store up my grain and be happy. And the God responds, of course, saying, you fool. And fool is not just a snarky insult, but it's a biblical, in a biblical context, it's typically used for someone who has no regard for God, someone who doesn't care for God. And God says, tonight your life is going to be demanded of you, and then what will you get? The mistake that the successful farmer made was not his abundance, but putting his security in his abundance and neglecting to bring God into the equation. When he looked upon his surplus harvest, a better prayer or statement may have been, Lord, you have blessed me abundantly. Thank you. How shall I return the favor by blessing others? God says, be rich towards God. That is, keep him in the equation of your life. Watch out, Jesus says. Let's see if I have a slide here. Yeah, here we go. Watch out. Be on your guard, get this, against all kinds of greed. We tend to think of greed in terms of the wealth money issue, but greed and covetousness comes in a variety of shapes and forms and occasions. Consider the story of Matthew Starr, who was at a Rangers game, sitting in the stands when a foul ball was hit. And it landed in the row right in front of him. So, like any fanatic, he leaped over the seat, and the ball was sitting at the feet of Nicholas O'Brien. So, Matt pushed Nicholas back into the seat and took the ball. And everybody got really mad at him because Nicholas was 4 years old. So Matt's mother, or Nicholas's mom, did what everyone thought she should do. She whacked him with her program. And all the fans yelled at him to give the ball back to the kid. And he said, no, it's mine. And he went to his seat and he sat down and he kept it. And some of the players saw this whole thing interactionally. Nicholas ends up with a baseball bat and a autographed baseball of Nolan Ryland. So this kid is making out really well. It turns out that Matt Starr has a change of heart. You know, he was a landscaper, but he was also a youth minister at the local church nearby. So I guess the Spirit spoke to him, and he turned things around, and he gave the ball back to the kid, and he bought tickets for the whole family to the next game, and that was that. But greed, covetousness, comes in many ways, and it often sneaks up on us when we least expect it. It's interesting in this chapter that Jesus goes from this warning against greed and covetousness to worry. They're like one part of the same unit. They're not two different lessons, but one lesson about two different things. And I spent a little bit trying to figure out, okay, what's the connection here? But Jesus says to his disciples, I tell you, don't worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you will wear. For life is more than food, and the body is more than clothes. Consider the ravens. They do not sow or reap. They have no storeroom or barn, and yet God feeds them. How much more valuable are you than birds? For who, by worrying, can add a single hour to your life? Covetousness and worry are different sides of the same issue. They both keep you focused on yourself and what's happening with you. and they both have a tendency to push God to the edge. And Jesus, and the solution happens to be the same, be rich towards God. And later Jesus will say, seek first his kingdom, give to the poor. Why worry? The young man came to Jesus and asked him to tell him his brother to share the inheritance. Jesus' response is to that man, but to all of us. Neither greed nor worry are ever satisfied. The successful farmer had a great harvest and needed bigger barns. And if we're worrying about something, when is our worry ever satisfied? We worry about everything. We have a whole list of necessities, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, flip side of our ability to worry is our ability to plan, that we can see into the future and to make adjustments to our life. And Jesus calls us to make those adjustments to include God's care and providence. You know, God is pretty much a realist. He knows that you need a car. He knows that you need a computer, that you have tuition payments, that you need a washer and dryer, your kids need braces, they need dance lessons and soccer cleats and the whole shebang. And then there's also the worry about our health and our care and those kinds of things. So what Jesus calls us to, whether we find ourselves in a situation of abundance where we don't have to worry about anything, except the unexpected, which we know is coming, which is kind of weird. And those who don't have anything and are worried about everything. You know, comparisons are inevitable, particularly in a material world, in a world that's prone to taking its identity and its security from the externals that we gather towards us. Comparisons are often very common and maybe even avoidable. It's that whole keeping up with the Joneses and whoever they are, I don't know, but Jesus said that the way forward is to compare yourself to the birds. Take a look out the window. Notice these, yeah, it's okay, you can do that. Feel free. Some of you have been looking out the window all morning, and so that's it. Consider the birds of the field and the birds of the air and the flowers of the fields. You know, the birds don't fuss about anything, and yet God feeds them. The flowers grow, and they're beautiful to behold, and Jesus says they're dressed better than the greatest king of Israel, better than his fine and glorious robes. And yet, in the end, the flower fades and it shrivels up and dies, and the ravens, they go on and they live. So Jesus says, re-evaluate yourself in light of those things. The birds, the flowers. Those are nice, but which one? Birds, flowers, me, you, which one is more valuable to God? And Jesus says, spend some time thinking about that. Pull yourself out of the spinning and the worrying and the concern and the gathering and the storing away and reevaluate yourself. He goes on to say, you've got to begin to live differently than the world around you. I was going to include a couple of pictures of Good Friday stampedes, but decided Black Friday stampedes, thank you. Yeah, it's like, I knew that didn't come out right, but I was going to just keep going, so. So anyways, you know, the season is upon us. Next week, there'll be this mad rush. And Jesus says this thing, don't set your heart on what you will eat or drink, and don't worry about it. For the pagan world runs after all such things, and your Father knows that you need him. Jesus is not saying that they're unimportant or unnecessary. He just says, don't set all of your energy on gathering them. Don't rush towards them, but rather adjust your perspective, relying on your Father to care for your needs. He goes on to talk about, in verse 33, sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide purses for yourselves that won't wear out, because where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. I think what Jesus is saying here is God takes care of the birds of the field and the flowers, and his intent is to take care of you. So join in God's concern for caring for his world and for each other. Start feeding the birds, so to speak, the poor among us. Seek first God's kingdom, that is, take on his agenda. Let his perspective fill you when it comes to abundance and your future and what's going to happen. Let his perspective fill you. And seek first his kingdom. And then he says this. All these other things will be added unto you. I don't know how he does it, but he does it. He always seems to fill in where we're not sure where it's going to come from. Put his kingdom first. And he says, if you're on my side, if you are committed to the things that I'm committed to, then I'm going to cover these for you. And I don't think that's a promise of prosperity and a life of ease. But rather, somehow God is going to take care of us. Seek the kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well. Then he goes on to say, don't be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. And there's I think there's a couple of ways to go after that, to get at that. One, I think, is simply to pray. Ask God what you need for. Peter says in his epistle to cast your cares upon him because he cares for you. One of the ways we did that very early in our marriage was we kept a journal of all of God's answers to our prayers. Now, he didn't answer all of them the way we said he should, but he answered them and provided for them. So there were times when we could flip back and say, oh yeah, remember this? Remember this? Remember this? And then the beauty of all of that was that we began to see God answer prayers that we didn't even know we were praying. But to begin to cultivate a trust in God and generosity, and to do that in small ways, however it's where you're at. Begin where you're at. Don't try to give it all away in this instant, but start where you're at. Find a small way to do that. There's a, and I want to just, I'll close with this. Thomas Merton was writing about possessions and the idea of detachment. And he writes this. God is not calling us to denounce the good and beautiful physical world that he created. He's not asking us to detach ourselves from things so that then we're able to attach ourselves to God. And he says, no, that's to turn God into another thing. But rather, he says, we become detached from ourselves, that is, our false selves that are trying to supply our own security and identity, in order that we may see and use all things for God. Let me give you that one more time. We don't detach ourselves from things in God's beautiful creation. Rather, we detach ourselves from ourselves in order to use all that God has given us for His glory. It's a little subtle thing, but I think it's an important twist for us. As we go forward, I ask that you'd be praying about our financial budget for the coming year and what role you will play in that. There is a card, and we'll gather those the 1st of December. But so know this, that your Father is pleased to give you His kingdom. Let's trust Him. Lord, thanks for your mercy, for your call, your determination to set us free from all things that bind us and keep us from liberty in you. We ask that we would begin to see fruit of your work in this area of our hearts. Amen. As always, our prayer ministers will be available for you in the back corner.
Thank you for listening. To find out more, check us out at storeschurch.org.